Welcome to the Morning Lineup Podcast. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com, joined by Allison Footer of MLB.com. Later, we'll be joined by our friend Jim Duquette. Allison's going to get him to give us his pitch for Shohei Ohtani, what's becoming one of the more unusual free agent pursuits on a number of levels. Spoiler alert, money's not the deciding factor. But we got a lot going on. Lots of teams, all but the Padres, have now met with Ohtani and made their pitch. Giancarlo Stanton seems to be playing a waiting game to find out if the Dodgers want him. Remember, Stanton has the leverage on this. And we've seen the first bit of thaw in the free agent market with the Cardinals and Rangers adding a pair of pretty highly regarded arms. I wanted to begin, though, by asking Allison to tell us about her weekend in Cincinnati and a rookie outfielder named Rookie Davis.
He's actually a rookie pitcher. He was a rookie last year, but yes, his name is Rookie, and he actually was in the Aroldis Chapman trade. That's how he got to Cincinnati. So he's 24 years old. He's a really nice guy, and he had started kind of a friendship on social media over Twitter with a 33-year-old gentleman who had a family, and this guy would kind of just, you know, tweet sort of encouraging things to Rookie when he was rehabbing, and they were trying to sort of meet each other when Rookie was at a minor league ballpark. It didn't work out. Anyway, tragically, this man passed away in September. It was just a random infection that turned into sepsis, and then he passed away, and it was so sad. And anyway, he has a wife and a 7-year-old son named Chase. And so Rookie took it upon himself to invite the family to Cincinnati for Reds Fest. Reds always have their annual fan fest the first weekend in December, which is really cool. They get like 100% participation from the players, coaches, former players, the manager, all the broadcasters are there. And it's just a really fun 2-day thing. And Rookie invited the family. So he invited Chase, who's 7 years old, to shadow him throughout the day, and just hang with him while he signed autographs and went from place to place. And it was just a really special day. And the thing that I loved about it was that this was Rookie Davis that came up with this idea. It wasn't like the Reds approaching him and saying, hey, let's do this cool thing. It was Rookie calling the Reds and saying, hey, this family's coming out. Please help me accommodate them. And the kid just had the time of his life. It was, you know, very kind of a bittersweet experience for everybody. Rookie's whole family was there. Chase's family was there. And they were kind enough to let me follow them around. I'm going to do a story on it. It'll be posted in a couple of weeks. And it just makes you feel good because this kid comes from really good stock. I spent time with his parents, and what a family, and you know, these random acts of kindness that just mean so much to people. So it was a very good way to spend a weekend in December for sure.
Yeah. Rookie Davis is 24 years old. He's had, you know, 7 starts in the major leagues, but he's one of those guys we're going to root for. All right. Now to the business of the day, Shohei Ohtani. And for Shohei Ohtani, we invite our good friend Jim Duquette to join us, a citizen of Baltimore, USA. How are you today, Jim?
I'm doing well, thanks. Baltimore, USA. You know it well, Richard.
Yes, sir. I do. I love Charm City. Now, Jim, this is like unlike any free agent pursuit we have seen in recent years in that it's not about the money. You know, teams are going to post the 20 million posting fee to the Nippon Ham Fighters, but they get that money. And he's going to play, Shohei Ohtani is going to play for the major league minimum of $545 next year. And teams have between $3.5 million. The Rangers, the Giants have basically nothing to spend. But now Shohei has met with every team, the Giants, the Angels, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Mariners, and the Rangers. He has not met with the Padres. Different things went on in those meetings. Bruce Bochy outlined how he could get him 300 at-bats with the new schedule and all of that. And, you know, and I think what we all agree on is that the free agent market is sort of stalled. If you want a pitcher, you're going to wait to see what this situation is resolved, at least in terms of before you go ahead and pursue everything else, because then the market gains more clarity. And Allison, pitch your question to Jim.
So Jim, this is what I want to know from a GM perspective. So this is something that none of us have ever experienced before, where we're talking about this highly sought after player and the money is not the biggest factor. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you can't go into these negotiations talking about like, oh, we can get you a suite on the road. We'll fly your family around. Well, you know, all the perks that are normally offered the big name free agent. So with no monetary discussions at all, what are general managers doing to present their teams to Ohtani? And my other question is, from the National League perspective, like, can you put it into the contract? Like, we're going to guarantee you 300 at bats. I mean, can he just like totally drive the train? So I want to hear from your perspective, like how you pitch to Ohtani.
Yeah. So it's a good question. It, you know, so I think, you know, the one thing you can't do as a team, you can't put anything in writing that it's just not allowed per the contract. Hey, we'll get you a certain number of at bats. You can in the contract with, you know, let's say when he signs a major league contract, you can negotiate, you know, certain incentives based off of plate appearances, it can't be home runs, RBIs, anything like along those lines, but it can be, you know, plate appearances, games played, innings pitched. So that would come, you know, later once he's obviously at the major league level. And that may be something that the agent negotiates, to try to push up that first year salary. But I think the things that you're trying to focus on, so, you know, you try to find out as much as you can about him personally, which has been hard to do, but you find out, okay, well, this is a very structured kid. They had a very structured, a plan for him. And so you try to structure a plan, as close to and similar so that the adjustment period isn't as great, you know, here in the States, when he comes over, because there is an adjustment period. There's no way, you know, the ball's different. The stadiums are different. The travel's different. All these things are different. The cultures are different. So you're trying to keep as much of what he had in Japan as similar as you can. And so, you know, when we were recruiting, you know, our Japanese players, we tried to show them areas where he would live when he's with the major league club, and try to show, you know, hey, we have a large Japanese American fan base here, you know, and you know, try to hit on that angle, try to hit on the strength and training and conditioning angle, you know, and you know, a team like San Diego has his old strength and conditioning coach. That's a little bit of an advantage, you know, a slight advantage that I would give the Padres over others. And so you might, if I'm competing against that, promise to him, hey, listen, we're in the process of hiring, you know, a bilingual, a Japanese strength and conditioning or a trainer or something. You're trying to touch on some things that are definitely important points for him to help in the transition. And you're doing the best you can based off of conversations, based off of your research, based off sometimes what the agent will tell you.
Jim, do you think this is going to work, that a guy can have 300 or 400 at bats in the major leagues while also being a starting pitcher?
It's going to be really difficult, Richard, I think. I mean, I think he's one guy that can do it. If, again, you tailor his schedule over in Japan, from what I know, was he'd pitch one day. He that was the day he didn't hit. And then he, you know, in the American League, and then he DH'd the three other days. And then, it's a 7-day work week. They had one day off. And so strength and conditioning those other 2 days. Something along those lines, if that schedule is like that, if he signs with American League club, I think you give it a shot and see what happens. The one thing we all, I think, don't know is how is he going to be able to hit in this league? We, you know, that takes time. And, you know, sometimes if you're a team that's in the division race, like we see with the Dodgers and Texas, let's say, or, you know, some of these other teams that, you know, are, there's pressure to win now, your leash is a little shorter if he's struggling out of the chute. And sometimes you're better off going to a team that's, maybe growing or learning, like the Padres, you know, and so that's where I think a trust factor comes in, your track record, your conversations, you know, and a lot of times that's best done face to face if you can pull it off. So, you know, I think there's different layers here. I don't know about the hitting side. I think from what people have told me, he should not have a lot of trouble once he gets adjusted to the hitting that he should be able to handle that. And if that's the case, then he's going to be a really good two-way player, because I know he can pitch. The guy has a tremendous arm. He's going to be a top of the rotation starter.
So that's interesting, because I think we were all under the impression when this whole process started that, oh, he will clearly be going to an American League team, so he can just go ahead and DH, not have to play a position and be able to pitch. And it seems like as time is going on, I hear more and more people sort of talking like you, Jim, were saying like, well, that's kind of an unknown factor. And so as far as the hitting goes, and so I'm starting to think like, maybe it's not such a great idea for an American League team to tab him like as the DH, to like have this penciled in this plan, in case that doesn't work. Because I think, as we've seen, when Japanese players come over to play in the major leagues, the pitching side tends to work out a little bit better than the hitting side. Hitters, it's more like kind of a 50-50 success rate, whereas pitching, you know, the guy throws 100, there's more of a guarantee there. But it really does seem like it might be even more beneficial for a team like the Padres that can slot him in and get him some at bats if the situation presents itself, but not to be like, okay, you have to be our DH. And if you can't do this, this could be a disastrous season.
Right. So interestingly, you know, I think I saw our colleague Mike Petriello, outline a real good article over the weekend about a way to get at bats both on the American League and the National League side. It's easy on the American League side. We saw him, you know, get those at bats. We saw how it worked, you know, as a Japanese player. And if he struggles, okay, then you're able to have a conversation with him. Hey, we want you to just pitch for now and work on the hitting. And you know, maybe the conversation is, in June, if he's struggling, okay, we know we're going to look at you more as a pinch hitter for the time being. And we're not going to give up totally on the hitting, but let's focus just on pitching. If you're in the National League, you know, the days that he's pitching, he's obviously hitting those days. He can be a pinch hitter for you, available almost every day. Maybe there are days you don't want him, as a pinch hitter because he's, you know, getting ready for his start. But, you know, you start to look at those at bats, and I think the way Mike outlined it, it was around 200 plate appearances as a National League player and 300 or so as an American League player. If he played as a DH for 3 days and didn't hit on the day that he pitched in pitching for an American League team, that's pretty compelling. It's 100 plate appearances less. It's not a whole lot less, you know, and so it's not as big of an advantage as maybe it seems on the surface. That to me, that article really, and that's the kind of thing, that's the selling that you're doing if you're in a National League team. You know, they've got, what, three of the teams or so are National League, or four of the teams are National League teams. That's what I'm selling. I'm selling that, hey, you're going to get plenty of plate appearances with us. You know, we're going to use you as a pinch hitter, and we're going to use you in these ways.
Okay, I just need to say one thing, that how cool is it that the Padres are like a front runner in this situation. I think for any of us that have covered baseball or worked in baseball that have, you know, that are so familiar with the industry and how it works, I think when this whole thing got started, we all rolled our eyes and said, clearly the Yankees are probably going to be the team. And I just love that the Padres are sitting out there in the most beautiful city in America, and that may get this thing done. And they have a lot to offer. And I think it's great for the game that we're actually talking about some of these teams that we never talk about in situations like this.
I agree with you, Allison. I think the one thing, if Major League Baseball, if you go back and you look at all of these prior signings for the players from the Japanese League, it always went to the highest bidder. You know, and most of those highest bidders, right, are the large market clubs. And if you're a small market club, you really couldn't even compete. You didn't even bother. You're like, I'm not getting into a bidding war with the Yankees or the Red Sox, Daisuke with the Red Sox and Tanaka with the Yankees and Darvish with Texas. Like, we're just not going to do it. But now this is exactly how you would want it to be designed, is that every team has the ability to get an impact type of player of this caliber. So, yeah, and it becomes not about money, but about secondary issues, you know, and the fact that they do have familiarity with him, the fact they trained, you know, at the Padres complex over the last couple of years. All of those things, he had a relationship. He knew AJ Preller, the GM there, from his recruiting days, and Logan White, who's an assistant GM. Like, all of those little things that it should matter, but hardly ever do. Now they're front and center.
Jim, you spent a good chunk of your adult life doing this and listening to athletes and watching them. What, at the end of the day, what do you think is going to be the deciding factor for him?
It seems that, you know, the team that has, that checks off the most boxes for him. So he has a list, you know, and I don't know if it seems, because this has been so organized, I wouldn't be surprised if he had a checklist of 20 things, you know, and you start looking at who checks off the most boxes, money being what it is, you know, they're pretty close financially. You know, it's going to be a lot of secondary issues that are going to, I think, make his final decision for him and what best fits his personality. So that, you know, I think that, you know, for, you know, in looking at it and trying to handicap it, Seattle is a very unique situation, and they've had such a historic background when it comes to Japanese players and Japanese ownership. To me, they have to be a front runner. And the Padres, I think, because of the things we just talked about, they seem to be a front runner. After that, it's hard for me to know. You know, I think it seems like the Giants would be another team that I would say would be final three. So to me, at the end, I think it wouldn't be surprised if the agent said, you know, this team addressed the issues the best and checked off the most boxes, and that's why he went where he went.
I wonder where winning is going to factor in.
It's a great question. It's hard to know. It seemed like he wanted to be a part of a team that won. You know, it's interesting because the way, as we all know, at this call, I mean, we see, you know, winning kind of changes from year to year. It changes so quickly, and you know, each one of these teams, you can create a story. Well, especially the Padres, who had probably the worst. Well, the Giants too, for that matter. But the Padres have had the most struggles over the last couple of years. But you can envision a scenario fairly soon where they start spending money. You know, getting a guy like Ohtani could speed up their rebuild process too. By the way, their ownership could decide, hey, you know what, we're going to spend money on Eric Hosmer too if we get Ohtani, because now we feel like we're closer, or another pitcher. You know, we'll have to wait and see. But it certainly would change the perception of the Padres if he went there, and you know, I think they would help their chances of winning sooner rather than later. And you know, I think the same thing goes with any of these. He's that type of impactful player, so I feel like, more than anything, I think he can choose the team that's the best fit, knowing that, you know, he's coming in and playing a big role. But, you know, I think that there's enough of the other parts are surrounding him aren't that far off on the team that's maybe the worst here, which has been, you know, San Diego over the last couple of years.
I feel like the Mariners would be the best fit, even though after this conversation, I'm totally in the Padres corner. I'm very convinced. But I do feel like Mariners are a great fit for many reasons. And also because they are a team that has just fallen short in the past few years. And always expected every spring training, we say, oh, this could be the Mariners' time to make the playoffs. They've had the longest drought. And then they just don't put it all together, and they still have some pretty scary names in that on that roster in terms of being able to win. And I feel like they could experiment a little bit with Ohtani, but while they're just on the cusp of maybe being a little bit better, there's not that expectation like they're supposed to win the division this year. They're supposed to be going to the playoffs. There could be a little wiggle room. It may not work on the offensive side. They could work some things out. And I just feel like that might be a good fit for him if he does want to at least be in a more competitive atmosphere.
I put the Mariners as my number one fit because of those factors, because of, listen, they've been preparing for this for a long time. They've had a long history of Japanese players, successful ones. They don't really have an impactful Japanese player on the roster now. Iwakuma, I know, signed back, but you know, we know he's had his health issues. And he could go in, Ohtani could go in right away and fit in so many of those areas and have a huge impact on the team. And by the way, it allows Jerry Dipoto, their general manager, to spend, you know, additional money to improve the team, kind of dollar cost average out the fact that Ohtani is going to be inexpensive, add in an expensive, maybe a potential pitcher like Arrieta or maybe not Darvish necessarily, but somebody like that as well. And now you've changed your team entirely with two acquisitions and done it very cost effectively. So I'm excited, you know, to figure out where he's going to end up. But I really do feel like the Mariners, you know, because of their aggressiveness too, are definitely one of those finalists.
Such amazing work the last two all seasons. He deserves to be rewarded the way he has gone after remaking that roster. So Shohei Ohtani is one of the stories of this offseason. Giancarlo Stanton, the National League Most Valuable Player, is the other. Our guy, Joe Fusaro, reported today that the Giants and Cardinals are the, quote, clear front runners for Stanton. But with the caveat that Giancarlo Stanton holds the cards, ultimately. Now, Allison, do you see him just waiting this out to exhaust every possibility they can play for the hometown Dodgers?
See, and that's my question, and I guess that's my question for Jim too. With no deadline, can he take his time? And I compare this, of course, here in Houston with Justin Verlander. So it was coming down to the August 31st deadline, and Justin wanted the Dodgers. He wanted the Cubs. The Astros really weren't on his radar. There was a finite amount of time that he had to make his decision, and then it came down to the last 2 minutes, and they said yes or no to the Astros, or you're going to continue to be a Tiger. With no clock going here, And I mean, can Stan just, you know, he's in the, he's got complete 100% control out of, over everything that happens. It's in his best interest, I would think, to go somewhere else. Because clearly he's not going to be playing for a competitive team in Miami for the entire duration of that contract. They want to get rid of him. So how do you see this sort of playing out as the winter meetings approach and as the offseason continues?
See, I think this is fascinating because the Dodgers don't seem to be stepping up, at least what we can tell. It seems like if they were really, really interested, we would know, right? We would be out there. And so having looking at all of that in that equation, at some point, the Giants and the Cardinals, they're not going to end up, one of them is not going to end up with a player. And there's a chance that both of them might not end up with them. And you have, you know, so where this becomes an issue for the Marlins and Stanton is those teams walk away and the Dodgers don't seem to be interested. Now you're coming back to Miami. That, like you said, Allison, that doesn't seem like it's a very good option. It's on the surface, the Marlins say, well, we get the great player, we get the MVP back. But they don't. They've already said that they need to move him. They don't want him anymore. And there's that potential for bad feelings there. I think it's, to me, you have to, the Marlins are really pushing to make a deal with one of the two teams that are there. Because they're both deals that they would do. They're trying to save money. That's the biggest key for them. So I think that's that, you know, the next couple of days are important because if you can't strike a deal, you risk them both walking away and going in a different direction and going on to the free agent market. And now you're left with a player that's unhappy with a high payroll and he's going to be left with not much to surrounding him in terms of talent.
And I don't think there's as much of a need. I mean, I think that's stating the obvious, but I'm very suspicious about the Dodgers being at all interested in a real sense, because you're talking about a team that made it to Game 7 of the World Series, absolutely could have won it. And like we said, just their determination over the last couple of years, you hear a lot about them wanting to infuse this, their own homegrown talent into this roster. They're paying so many players that aren't even playing for them. They want to get back to being a more traditional team that has some more reasonable finances. And it just seems like the only people who are talking about the Dodgers being interested in Stanton are in the Stanton camp. I just don't see the Dodgers really having really any motivation at all to get this done. And then I really think that this could end up being sort of a disaster from the Marlins standpoint. Jim, like you said, I think that absolutely could happen, that they kind of, you know, they leave Orlando, they leave the winter meetings, the offseason creeps into January and nothing's happening. And then it's just everything's off and everyone kind of walks away from it.
Allison and I were talking this afternoon, you know, this is true of every executive, but Andrew Friedman really values his prospects. And I think the idea that can they afford a $300 million contract? Absolutely. Are they willing to afford a $300 million contract? I just don't see them getting involved. And the other thing, Jim, just tell me I'm crazy here. I think the Marlins have made it clear they're not trading Yelich and Ozuna. They're not even discussing those two guys until the Stanton thing is cleared up. I think the Cardinals want to finish second in this and go get Yelich or Ozuna. It makes so much more sense from a payroll perspective. I don't know at the end of the day what Stanton's options are going to be.
And Richard, I think to further your point, I think the Dodgers want one of those two guys too, an Ozuna and Yelich. That fits more the way they operate. Now, you know, they operate, they're looking for, excess value, right? We hear that all the time. Production, you know, for what you're paying them, you know, in Stanton, there's no excess value that's already built into the contract. And you have to give up talent too, for them, you know, as much as they want the player, you know, there's luxury tax issues that they'll have to deal with potentially at the end of this year if they can't move some of their tough money like McCarthy or Kazmir, or even Ryu. So, you know, they're looking at potentially paying, you know, 50% tax on top of, you know, the additional tax of over $235 million and having their first round pick set back 10 spots if they're over that, you know, by 40 million. Like, there's a lot of ramifications for this front office if they were to trade for Stanton. They could fit him. No doubt. They have the revenues, but that's kind of goes against how they've been trying to operate over the last couple of years. I don't personally think it's in their DNA to make a deal for Stanton like it is in let's say, San Francisco.
And I don't think there's as much of a need. I mean, I think that's stating the obvious, but I'm very suspicious about the Dodgers being at all interested in a real sense, because you're talking about a team that made it to Game 7 of the World Series, absolutely could have won it. And like we said, just their determination over the last couple of years, you hear a lot about them wanting to infuse this, their own homegrown talent into this roster. They're paying so many players that aren't even playing for them. They want to get back to being a more traditional team that has some more reasonable finances. And it just seems like the only people who are talking about the Dodgers being interested in Stanton are in the Stanton camp. I just don't see the Dodgers really having really any motivation at all to get this done. And then I really think that this could end up being sort of a disaster from the Marlins standpoint. Jim, like you said, I think that that absolutely could happen, that they kind of, you know, they leave Orlando, they leave the winter meetings, the offseason creeps into January and nothing's happening. And then it's just everything's off and everyone kind of walks away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so rare to be in this type of situation that, you know, the Marlins are in a really difficult spot, and, you know, they've kind of been clear what their desire is, but it's also, you know, in a couple of days from now, we could be looking at this the same way. It's really turned out to be the worst case scenario for them, which is, you know, in sense of, you know, worst case scenario is keeping Giancarlo Stanton. Well, it seems counterintuitive, right, to all of us, but if they're trying to, you know, bring their payroll down, that's exactly what they don't want. So, you know, it's again, I think the biggest risk that on the timing side of things, like you brought up the good comparison of Verlander. We're not sitting here saying, okay, well, 30 seconds from now or a minute from now, we're going to run out, the deadline's over, and you have to make your decision now. Sometimes it helps you make a final decision. But at some point, there has to become a deadline. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if we see that out of both of these teams fairly soon.
Jim, I wanted to ask you one question about the Giants. Okay, they get Giancarlo Stanton. They still have an issue in center field. They still have an issue at third base. They still need, they need an arm in the bullpen, at least one more. Maybe not. I mean, the bullpen did okay down the stretch. If you do that, if you go out and address third base and another outfielder, you're pushing $220 or $30 million. You're into that second year in a row on the luxury tax. And I guess my question is, does Stanton make sense for the Giants?
Well, I mean, I think it's a fair question. I think with them, you know, they start to free up more money next year. Interestingly, Stanton, he's 28. He would be the youngest player on their everyday roster. All of their guys. So they're getting old. They're getting, you know, and we've seen, you know, them somewhat on the decline. I think, you know, in the ideal world, maybe in different circumstances, you'd see them tearing this thing down and trying to rebuild it. That's not in the Giants' DNA, doesn't seem like, and certainly not with those three guys, whether it's Bruce Bochy, Bobby Evans, Bill, Brian Sabian. So, you know, I think what we all think might be the best course isn't always necessarily the course that they want to go. I think once they go down this road, if they get Stanton, then you're right. They need to find a third baseman. You know, if Pablo's not the answer for me, but they may have to go with him. If I've heard D. Gordon's name mentioned in this type of deal, so maybe he comes with him and Joe Panik goes back. They're going to have to look at some other holes and try to fill them on that lesser side, or else their payroll is going to be where we're talking about for the Dodgers. But they're going to. It looks like they're willing to go over the luxury tax, at least for the time being, to try to get themselves back on track. I just question, you know, how good a strategy this is for the long term.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out as we move toward the winter meetings in Orlando, which we arrive on Sunday. They begin on Monday. Jim, thanks for stopping by.
Guys, thanks for having me. Good to catch up again.
Thanks, Jim. Take care.
Okay, we've seen a little bit of a thaw in the free agent market, the free agent pitching market. Mike Minor agrees to terms with the Rangers. Miles Mikolas agrees to terms with the Cardinals. In terms of impact, these don't make you slap your forehead, But, you know, probably Greg Holland and Mark Reynolds didn't make slap your forehead last January and February either and ended up being huge for the Rockies. What is your gut reaction of either of these two, Allison?
Yeah, I was kind of doing a little research on Mikolas, and it's very intriguing. And, you know, I could look a little further into it, probably too far into it, and think, oh, they just signed a pitcher, so maybe they're going to be making a trade for Stanton where they have to trade some of their pitching. But that seems like a little bit of a stretch. But I'm very intrigued because they're paying him a pretty decent amount of money, and $15.5 million over 2 years. I mean, he had a lot of success in 3 years in Japan after he was pretty much a failure in his first try in the major league. So, you know, I think about Eric Thames, how he got himself together as a hitter. I think he would play the Korean League and then came over and you know, was such an impact player for the Brewers when the season first started. So I don't know. I mean, I like his numbers and I like the fact that they went out and, you know, kind of signed him a little bit on the early side and that they're really taking a chance on him. And like you said, I mean, you don't know how these things are going to work out, but that's why they have their scouts that are, you know, watching these guys very intensely and doing their homework on them. And, you know, maybe he put some things together and he could really help that. The Cardinals rotation has got some good names in it. It's got a lot of guys that seem to be gunning for starting spots come spring training. But there's also some injuries in there too. And, you know, Adam Wainwright and Michael Walker are names that, of course, we're very familiar with, but they've had their issues. So you can never have too much pitching. Pitching, pitching, pitching. And that's where it goes.
Yeah, Miles Mikolas wouldn't be the first guy to rehab his career in Japan, and he was really good in three seasons there, and they gave him 2 years of $15.5 million, you know, and it leads you to think, okay, Wainwright, Waka, Carlos Martinez, you know, Alex Reyes is recovering from Tommy John. It gives them the flexibility to trade somebody. For people that don't know Miles Mikolas, his nickname is the Lizard King. And he got that in the Arizona Fall League in 2011. And how would you get the nickname the Lizard King, Allison?
I read the first sentence of the explanation, which is that he swallowed a live lizard, and that is where I stopped reading. There are some things that I cannot, there are places, Richard, that I cannot go, and that is one of them. So I will let you have the floor here and say whatever you want on that.
Yeah, let's go to Mike Minor. He is one of, you know, Dayton Moore, the Royals general manager, is a good egg. He is one of the good guys in baseball. And he took a chance on Mike Minor when it looked like shoulder issues, well, derailed him for 2 years. And he came back this spring and he came back as a reliever. His velocity went from 91 to 95. And according to StatCast, his spin rate on his four-seam fastball was the third highest for relief pitchers in baseball. And he gives the Rangers a lot of flexibility. I mean, he slots in there behind Cole Hamels, Martin Perez, Doug Fister. And then if they get Otani, you know, and if Matt Busch can make the transition to the rotation, he becomes a starting pitcher. But the point I was going to make is the Royals were so great in the care and the rehab of Mike Minor in nursing him back. They signed him for 2 years. They only got 1 year out of him. Late in the year, Dayton Moore pulled Mike aside and just shook his hand and said, you know, and what he was saying was, I know we can't afford you now, but I am so happy that you have restarted your career here in Kansas City, and wherever you go, we're going to be rooting for you. I mean, you know, Mike Minor has a chance to be one of the great stories in baseball next year, as he was in 65 games this year. But Dayton Moore is a pretty fine gentleman, isn't he?
Oh, we love Dayton Moore. I mean, you will not find anybody in the game that does not like Dayton Moore. And if you don't, then what would you used to say, Richard? If you don't like so-and-so, then you just don't like apple pie. Yeah, no, that's great. And I'm glad that Mike Minor was able to resurrect himself a little bit. Reportedly, like a multi-year deal with the Rangers, that there seemed to be wanting him as a starter. I said last year that the Rangers, I mean, definitely their minor league system has taken its hits as they traded away a lot of guys to be as competitive as they were during their good years, which were very recently. But, you know, then the slow erosion starts. And so I'm looking at the Rangers being extremely aggressive, wanting Otani. I mean, what if they landed Otani and now they're putting together, you know, something of a rotation that might be a force? It's not going to be enough to overtake the Astros, but certainly, I mean, I have to give them credit that they're still pushing. And then, of course, a year from now, I'll be like, they should have just broken it down and started over, you know, if things don't work out so well. That's how it goes. But I don't know. What do you think of the Rangers overall?
Yeah, John Daniel said, no, we're not going to rebuild. In other words, we're not going to trade Adrian Beltre. And as long as we have Adrian Beltre, we're full speed ahead. He's trying to cut his payroll. And so what do? You go, you trust your baseball people, and you go sign two under-the-radar free agents, Doug Fister, that you and I know, and Mike Minor now, who had a great year in Kansas City. I don't know that it's not a big gamble to start him, because he reestablished himself as a reliever last year and was great. But that'll be one to keep an eye on. And you're right. If they get Ohtani, then you're lining up Cole Hamels, Ohtani, Martin Perez, Fister, maybe Matt Bush, maybe Mike Minor. You suddenly have some depth, and then those bullpen arms that you need, you've got that too. The other thing I wanted to touch on before we go is we're seeing the Braves prospects land now. Kevin Maitain, 17-year-old shortstop, signed for the Angels for $2.2 million. These were the free agents let go after the Braves scandal. But our Jesse Sanchez told a great story about an 18-year-old named Jeffrey Del Rosario, $650,000 signing bonus. Allison, he signed with the Royals. He turned down more money elsewhere. Speaking of Dayton Moore, he turned down more money elsewhere because Yordano Ventura is his favorite guy, and he wants to wear the same uniform that Ventura wore during his brief life. So that's one of the cool things. He got $1 million originally in 2016 to sign with the Braves, and now he's going to the team that his favorite player pitched for.
Yeah, that's a great story. You know, you wonder, I mean, did he know Ventura? Did Ventura used to tell him about the kind of organizations that the Royals have? Because you're not going to find a classier bunch of people than the Royals. And so that's not only is that a wonderful tribute to his pitching or his baseball idol, but it is also a really good organization to land. So good for that kid. And I hope that he goes on to have a great career. I hope all these guys that were sort of just thrown out there after the Braves disaster with everything that happened, I hope that they all become extremely good players in the major leagues. I think that would be a great story.
That's it for the Morning Lineup podcast. We await the decision of Mr. Ohtani and Mr. Stanton. And we await some more thawing of the free agent market. Who knows, next time we speak, Allison, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, and Jake Arrieta may all be off the market. I don't think so, but maybe. So
maybe they'll all be Padres.
Yeah, maybe they'll say, I'm going where Ohtani goes. All right. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Richard.